This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbach.
This week on The Gaggle, we have Herbie Ziskin. Herbie is Revolution's Director of Public Policy and Director of Rise of the Rest Investments. Before that, Herbie worked for Arianna Huffington. Herbie was Chief of Staff to Arianna Huffington at the Huffington Post Media Group. Herbie also worked in the White House. Herbie, it is a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for inviting me on, David.
Herbie, let's talk first and foremost about the Obama family Seder, something that you've been involved in since the beginning of it. The Washington Post reported that you co-led the final Seder with President Obama, the First Lady, and a small group of the many White House rituals, Christmas parties, Easter egg roll, state dinner. The White House Seder is something President Obama brought. He's the first president to host a Seder. Can you explain how the Seder was invented and how you got to co-lead it?
Well, it's a pretty amazing and unlikely tradition, but it goes back to the campaign trail, actually, in 2008. I was working at the time on the Obama campaign. It started early in 2007. And by the spring of 2008, we were in the long, hard-fought primary against then-Senator Hillary Clinton, as you remember well. And we were in Pennsylvania in April of 2008 on the campaign trail. And I had this job where I was basically an advanced guy, but I would travel for 5 or 6 days a week with Senator Obama. And it was like a pinch yourself job. I was getting turkey sandwiches and hanging the Hope sign up on the podium and, you know, running errands throughout the day. And I was in heaven. I was 21, 22, 23 years old during the campaign. And we're on the trail in Pennsylvania in April of 08, and it was Passover. And a small group of us, myself, Eric Lesser, and Arun Chaudhry, we all traveled then with Senator Obama. We realized we would not be able to go home for Passover. And so we had this day that began in a train station in Philadelphia at like 6 a.m. We were decorating a train, and then we did a little whistle stop train tour from Philadelphia to Harrisburg. And we realized we weren't going to be able to get home. So we had a bunch of Passover items sent to the Sheraton in Harrisburg. Eric Lesser handled it all. And we got there, we had Haggadahs, we had the Seder plate, Kiddush cup, and we put together a little makeshift Seder. And just before we were about to start, after a long day on the trail at like probably 9 p.m., Senator Obama popped his head in and said, "Hey guys, this is the Seder." And we said, "Yeah, come join us, Senator." And so Obama came, Valerie Jarrett, having the opportunity to take a break for 2 hours, go over the story of the Exodus out of Egypt and relate it to everyone's lives and modern times was a really unique moment. And so the senator said at the end, instead of next year in Jerusalem, he said, "If we win, next year in the White House." So sure enough, the next year, just before Passover in 2009, he said, "Hey guys, we want to do this again." By then I was working for Vice President Biden after we had won. And so Eric, Arun, and I co-led what was the first Seder ever with a president in the White House. There was about 20 of us, some top aides to the president, close friends, the First Lady, Malia and Sasha. And we did the same thing with the Haggadahs and, you know, hid the Afikomen in the White House. And we ended up doing it every year from 2009 through last week, which was the 8th and final White House Seder. And, you know, each year it was a chance to bring this group back together, a chance to take a break. It's a private gathering. There's no media. It's a very candid conversation. We have our own little jokes and rituals. And it, when you get past the Secret Service agents and you get, you know, past the fact that you're in this historic building, it's just like any other Seder. President Obama is funny and cracking jokes and very open, as is the First Lady and everyone there. So it's a special tradition. It's an honor to be part of it. And in this final gathering, I was able to bring my dad, which was really special.
How did you originally become involved in the Obama campaign?
I was graduating from college in 2007. I went to Cornell, and I knew I wanted to get involved in the 2008 campaign, and the timing was perfect. I was really lucky. I was graduating just as the campaign was getting started, and at the time, the three leading Democrats were Clinton, John Edwards, and Obama. And when I saw Obama announce his campaign and watched the announcement from Springfield, Illinois, I remember watching in my apartment in Ithaca, New York, I was just captivated. I was moved by him. I felt a connection. I knew I wanted to be part of it. And I didn't really know anybody. My mom and dad never worked in politics. I don't think they ever met a politician until Obama. So I started actually driving my 20-year-old car from Ithaca to Manchester to volunteer on the campaign. And this was kind of like directly out of a movie, but I was up there skipping school, volunteering, entering data into a spreadsheet. And some of the guys on the advanced team said, "Hey, are you a student?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Oh, great. Are you a student at UNH?" And I said, "No, I go to Cornell. It's like 6 hours down the road." And they said, "Great, well, join us." And so I ended up skipping a week or two of school at different times throughout my second semester senior year. And I was traveling as an advanced guy. I didn't even know what that meant at the time, but helping to set up events across New Hampshire. This was early. This was before there was Secret Service. And, you know, I got to know the senator, and I got to know the senior advisors, David Axelrod and Gibbs and others. And they said, "When you graduate, give us a call." So in May, I graduated, and I ended up spending basically a year and a half from May of 07 until November of 2008 on the road. And I was first this advanced motorcade job where I would travel and run errands and be in the motorcade throughout the day. And, you know, if there needed to be another person on the basketball court in the morning, I would play. If, you know, Axelrod spilled ketchup on his shirt, I'd run to a store in Kokomo, Indiana and grab him a shirt. I'd grab lunch for the senator. And I was just in heaven. I loved politics. This was an incredible moment where you had African-American guy and a woman as the leading Democrats. And to be part of it and to spend a day in Iowa one day, the next day in Miami, the next day after that in Chicago, to see America and to visit small towns across the country and watch this campaign unfold from a front row seat was a wild experience. And I was really in awe throughout. And then in the general election, they created a vice presidential nominee team before there was a VP nominee. And I was assigned to whoever that would be as the traveling staff aide. And obviously that became Biden. And so in the general in 08, I was the traveling aide to Biden. I was in charge of all the luggage on the plane, the logistics. I was printing off all his speeches on a little portable printer I had and was everywhere with the VP nominee. And then as soon as we won in 08, I moved to Washington and started working on the transition team in the VP's office. I was in charge of the daily briefing book. That was like half the job. And then I did policy and press and communications and also was kind of a staff assistant as well. And I did that for the first few years in the administration in the VP's office. And then through 2011 and then eventually moved on after that.
What was it like to see the campaign grow from the beginning?
To watch this underdog campaign go from being a little nimble insurgent startup to what it grew into, which was, you know, a large and successful operation and ultimately a winning campaign, was really extraordinary. And I remember just being out there on long days, traveling across Iowa, going to events in little towns in, you know, Independence, Iowa with 80 farmers and Obama, and watching that and eventually being with 70,000 people in Portland, Oregon, and watching the team grow and the country become captivated by this young and dynamic senator from Illinois was really a special and amazing thing. And education in politics, you know, I was very junior. I was as junior as you could be for someone traveling. But through osmosis, I learned really how to do retail politics. I learned about the issues. And that, you know, that experience was extraordinary. And I remember a few specific moments. I mean, there's so many, but there was a night in Madison, Wisconsin, where I believe, if I have this right, Obama had just won the primaries in Virginia and Maryland, and I think in Maine. And we flew to, I might have this a little bit wrong, but we were in Madison in February of 08. We had just won primaries in other states. And Obama gets up, takes the stage. There's probably 30,000 people in the arena. I think it's the Kohl Center in Madison. And it was at that moment when I thought, oh, my goodness, I think he's going to win. And the math started to look right. The crowds were huge. And I remember sitting there thinking, I think I'm working for the next president. And then throughout the campaign, there were days like that. I mean, one of the most memorable weeks I had was the week leading into the South Carolina primary, when Obama had won Iowa, Hillary had won New Hampshire, Nevada had been kind of split, and we were going across these small, poor towns and big cities in South Carolina, the first state to secede from the Union, and you've got this African-American candidate, and the crowds were huge, and people were lining the streets. And when he ultimately won South Carolina by, I think, 28 points, it was another moment where I thought, wow, this is part of history.
Since leaving the White House, you've had two bosses, both of them entrepreneurs, Arianna Huffington, the co-founder of Huffington Post, and Steve Case, the billionaire co-founder of AOL and CEO of Revolution. Can you tell us first what is Revolution and what kinds of companies you invest in, what the focus of it is, and what you specifically do?
Sure. And I actually have one other boss. I have one other boss, too, which is Ron Klain. And Ron was the chief of staff to Biden in the White House, and he had left and joined Revolution, and I ended up following a few months later in 2011. Revolution is a investment firm, and Steve Case is the co-founder of AOL. He really, more than anybody, led the commercialization of the internet. AOL was the most successful company of the 1990s, and it really literally got America online. And after the AOL-Time Warner merger, Steve eventually stepped down from AOL-Time Warner and started Revolution. And the mission is to invest in people and ideas and companies that can change the world. And so it's an investment firm, and we've backed companies like Zipcar, Sweetgreen, Living Social, Optoro, a bunch of companies across the country. And the hope and the goal is to find great entrepreneurs who have big ideas and help them grow their companies and become the next AOL. And so I started in 2011 really as Steve's chief of staff working across the business. We were raising some institutional investment funds back then and getting much more involved in public policy. And over time, Revolution has grown in terms of the size of its funds. And, you know, we've adopted this thesis, which is what we call Rise of the Rest, which is the piece of Revolution that I oversee, which means rise of the rest of U.S. cities across the country that are not Silicon Valley, Boston, and New York. And our thesis is that there are talented entrepreneurs and innovation happening in places like Buffalo and Charleston and Raleigh-Durham in a way that there wasn't 10 years or 20 years ago. And so we invest time and money in startups in places all across the country like those. We actually, a few times a year, get on a big bus. We partner with Google and with Salesforce, and we go and we spend 5 days at a time investing in entrepreneurs in five cities across the country. We've done this in 19 different cities, and we're really trying to position ourselves as the firm for entrepreneurs and startups that are growing in places like Pittsburgh and Kansas City and Des Moines. And so I oversee that effort, and the hope is really to create businesses that can make a big difference.
David Plouffe went to Uber. Jay Carney went to Amazon.
What does this say about the emergence of technology in the last few years and its intersection with government?
Well, to quote Steve Case, you know, that we're entering what Steve calls the third wave of the internet, meaning we're entering an era when the internet is becoming really ubiquitous and pervasive in all things and throughout our lives. And what that means is technology is really becoming horizontal. There's no longer technology companies and companies that are not technology companies. Walmart has a huge e-commerce business. And if you go back in time, really from 1985 to 2000, if you think about that as the first wave of the internet, it was really about literally laying the pipes and building the foundation for the internet in an online world. AT&T, Cisco, AOL, they were literally building the infrastructure of the internet. And then from about 2000 until recently, the second wave of the internet was a period when companies were building apps and mobile technology on top of the internet. Facebook, eBay, Waze, these are companies that are built on top of the underlying infrastructure. But now in the third wave, the growth of internet technology is reaching a point where the sector is becoming larger and larger. And so and touching people's lives in hugely impactful ways. You know, and we think, and Steve lays this out in his book called The Third Wave, that sectors that have not really been disrupted or transformed that are the biggest ones in the economy, health, food, education, financial services, we think that those sectors are going to be finally disrupted by entrepreneurs in this third wave. And so I think that's why we're seeing people like Plouffe and Carney and Ron Klain and Ted Uliott, who works in Republican politics and was at Facebook for a number of years. We're seeing more and more people go from government to technology because it's becoming a much more critical part of our economy and will continue to be in the years to come. So I think that trend is definitely going to continue. And I think more and more as sectors like transportation, look at Uber, healthcare, look at Oscar, Theranos. There's going to be a much more critical intersection between government and technology. And so I think we're going to continue to see more and more people leave future administrations and go to technology companies and companies that are not technology companies, but that rely on technology.
Is it true that you traveled 4,000 miles at Revolution?
Yeah. So we get on a bus a few times a year, as I mentioned, and we've been to 19 cities and we calculated that the bus has gone about 4,000 miles. And in every city we invest in a startup and an entrepreneur. And so we invest $100,000 in 19 cities. And the program has been really celebrated by President Obama at the White House, leading Republicans across the country. We've done events with Republican governors and Democratic governors and local leaders. And really the reason is that for the first time, there's an understanding in public, in local and in state government and in the federal government that startups are actually a different piece of the economy than small business. Small businesses are important. They're part of the lifeblood of the economy. But small businesses are businesses that really don't add or subtract a lot of jobs on net every year. Same thing for large businesses. Large corporations and small businesses create and lose jobs, and it usually comes up to about zero every year. But startups are the net drivers of job creation across the country. They account for, the Kauffman Foundation says, about all the net new jobs come from new businesses, from startups. And within that, gazelle firms, which are really the fastest growing startups, account for 40% of the job creation. So if you're a mayor in Philadelphia, if you're the governor in Virginia, you want a much more robust startup ecosystem to create new jobs, new innovations, new services. And at Revolution, we think that this is going to really accelerate in the years to come. And that's why we're focusing on those parts of the country.
From working so closely with Arianna Huffington, what did you learn about media and technology?
Well, so during my time at Revolution, I've been at Revolution for 5 years. I actually left for a year and a half and went to the Huffington Post. The AOL, which Steve Case started, owns the Huffington Post. And I had an idea for a media startup, and I was working on it, and I was introduced to Arianna Huffington, and she is the most charismatic person I've ever met. I mean, she's unbelievable. And she said to me, why don't you come to New York, and if you want to learn about media, come work at the Huffington Post. And so I went and I worked for her, and I helped her manage the editorial and the business side of the business. There's 800 employees in 15 countries, I think even more countries now. It's the most read news site in the English language, so an extraordinary success story in new media. And she really is a digital pioneer who really has seen and continues to see ahead of the curve in terms of where media is going. And if you think about it, the Huffington Post started in 2005 when everyone was consuming news in terms of online news on desktop. And the way you got to news sites was through search. But really quickly, things have shifted to people consuming content and news on mobile that's driven by social. And yet Arianna has been able to really pivot HuffPost quickly, and it's one of the most valuable media brands in the new media landscape. And so I really understood and learned through that experience working for her and with my colleagues at the Huffington Post where media is going, where the internet is going, what type of content does well on the internet, what doesn't, the prospects for video, and much more. So I didn't set out to work for people like Steve and Arianna, but I've been fortunate to do so and have learned a lot from them as well as from Ron Klain throughout the last 8-9 years.
Where are we headed in terms of technology and trends in the next administration?
Well, I think it's a great question. And I think that a few things are going to happen. One is, if you go back to 08, 09, when Obama and Congress was passing the Affordable Care Act, nobody realized, I don't think at the time, I don't remember anyone talking about this when I worked for Biden and we were working on healthcare reform. Nobody was discussing how as the internet becomes ubiquitous, there's going to be a shift to the gig economy. And, you know, as mobile phones enable companies like Uber to create on-demand projects and jobs, that really the nature of work would change. And so Obamacare ended up being one of the very positive consequences that no one saw at the time, was that it made it possible for people to participate in the quote-unquote flexible economy, the Uber economy, and bring with them their healthcare benefits. So I think over the next few years, that trend, the Uberization and really the future of work, is going to accelerate. And I think the very nature of work and what it means to have a job will change going up the skills ladder, meaning, you know, I think it's possible that in 10 years, the most highly skilled workers in the economy will have 3 or 4 employers that they do work for, but no full-time job. If you don't have a full-time job, that means how do you get your 401k benefits, your paid sick leave, your retirement, your vacation time. And probably the next administration, we're already starting to see this, is going to have to really consider modernizing and updating the social safety net to account for the fact that people are going to be working for multiple employers and not have one full-time employer. So that's one thing. I think back to the third wave, I think more and more regulated sectors are going to see startup innovation in ways that really touch people's lives. I mean, healthcare, the way it's delivered, hasn't really changed that much in the last few decades. Education is still delivered the same way that it was basically 200 years ago. And yet, you know, you can watch any lecture and obtain any information on your smartphone that you would learn in the classroom. And so disrupting education and having to work with local governments and state governments and school boards and school districts is going to be a big piece of it. Same thing in transportation, food, the way people consume food hasn't really changed, and technology can really enable innovations there. So I think those are some of the trends we're going to see, but it's as Yogi Berra famously said, it's hard to make predictions, especially about the future. And it's hard to say, but I think there's going to be a lot of change, especially around the social safety net in the years to come.
Herbie, final question, and I always end with it. If someone wants to follow a career path like yours, whether it's enter politics or enter politics and then go into the private sector, how would they do it?
Well, I think the main thing, and it almost sounds cliche, but I think it's true, is to just follow your passion and follow your gut. If you identify something you love, whether it's politics or teaching or finance or engineering, go as much as you can and do that thing that you love. And when you do that, I think it opens up doors and opportunity. I was incredibly lucky and fortunate to realize I loved politics, and it happened to be a year when a presidential campaign was starting. I happened to pick the guy who was most inspiring to me, and he ended up winning. There's a lot of luck there. But I think when you follow what it is that you're passionate about, good things can happen. And then try to work for really smart people that can teach you. Working for Ron Klain and Steve Case and Ariana and also others as well allows me to learn every day. And I think that's an important piece of it. So follow your passion, learn from smart people, and try to have fun and not take yourself too seriously.
Herbie Ziskin, Revolution's Director of Public Policy and Director of Rise of the Rest Investments, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.